to Gonkcast, a long-form discussion podcast about the music of English electronic duo Autechre, album by album, EP by EP. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And we're finally back with an episode on arguably the most famous AE bootleg ever, a soundboard recording of a Gotta Hear It to Believe It live set that took place at the Glasgow School of Art on April 15th. 2005. Our plan is to hit on a few more AE soundboards in a follow-up episode soon, maybe packaging in some of the miscellaneous listener emails that have been piling up lately, but we decided we'd give Glasgow its own episode first because it's near and dear to so many of our hearts. That being said, we still want to hear about other favorite AE bootlegs as well as any Autechre thoughts that are on your mind, so be sure to email us gonkcastpod@gmail.com. And thanks, by the way, to everybody who wrote in to forgive us for our erratic release schedule lately. We appreciate you all. Okay, Dan, I think we've both been eager to get to this one, so why don't you tell us everything we need to know about Glasgow 2005.
As you mentioned, this set was performed at the Glasgow School of Art in Scotland on April 15th, 2005. It was the second date of Autechre's massive tour behind Untilted, which would come out 3 days later on April 18th. It's also worth remembering that this was the tour that led directly to Choristus. As the story goes, Sean moved to a new place in Manchester immediately after returning to the UK, so while most of their equipment was in storage, the guys had no choice, but to jam with their touring rig. Indeed, the Glasgow set is famous for sounding like a lost album between Untilted and Choristus. Tracks from both are present, and the simplicity of the Untilted sound, which Rob described as a couple drum machines and a MIDI sequencer, is in the process of evolving into something else entirely.
And for all the gearheads out there, we know that Untilted used a lot of the Electron mono machine and machine drum, but it sounds like they added an Akai MPC 1000 and Nord Modular G2 to this tour setup, according to random people on the internet. Lastly, I'll just repeat the point that is, this is probably the most popular of AE's many bootlegs. It's currently got a 4.07 on Rate Your Music and has the most ratings of any AE bootleg by far. Part of that obviously has to do with the quality of the performance, but it's also because it's one of those rare, fantastic sounding soundboards. I tried to figure out where exactly this recording came from, by the way, and of course I couldn't find anything, but there was a guy on We Are the Music Makers, the forums, claiming to have a WAV file instead of the MP3 that's floating around, but he said he was scared to leak it and he swore he wasn't the one who leaked it in the first place. I don't know, it's probably all bullshit, but I do hope we'll get lucky one day and that WAV file will actually leak. It's been long enough that I think we ought to review our general feelings on this era before diving in. If I remember correctly, you're not as hot on Untilted as I am, right, Dan? But how do you feel about 2000, like late 2000s AE, that kind of from Untilted to Choristus period?
Yeah, Untilted is not one of my favorite. It's probably my second least favorite of the main albums. Draft being my least favorite. But I do like Choristus a bit more. So I wouldn't say I'm cold on that period of Autechre, but it's definitely not my favorite at all.
Yeah, I was a little bit in the same boat before we started the podcast. I thought this whole kind of like basically from Draft through to Choristus was, you know, a little hit or miss for me. But then once we did the deep dive for the podcast, I just became enraptured with both Untilted and Choristus, not Draft, unfortunately, but those two became two of my like favorite Autechre albums ever, and so I remain very, very hot on it. I know this will be kind of weird since both of us have been familiar with this bootleg for a long time. In fact, we planned to do this episode a long time ago and had to delay it, and now we're finally circling back around. But I'm wondering if you can remember what you hope to find in the Glasgow set. Imagine you just heard that this is, you know, the AE bootleg to end all AE bootlegs, and it's basically like a lost album between Untilted and Choristus, as the mythology goes. What would you hope it sounded like, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It is a little hard to do that because I think we were originally going to do this like a year ago or so, about the time we did Choristus, and I don't know, something came up. So it's been a long time since I heard it for the first time. But, hearing the just thinking of, you know, what hearing the Lost album in between those two things, you know, I just thinking of that, especially being not so hot on Untilted, you know, a little maybe not as excited going into it, just because, you know, that's sort of the least favorite of my periods. But then again, I do like Carissa. So always interested to, you know, hear any sort of transformation of, you know, how they get from one place to another. You know, we always talk about how big of jumps they can take between albums. So it's really nice to, you know, I guess what I really want to hear is that like intermediary space between the two steps. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I guess like to push you a little bit, it's like, what don't you love about Untilted? Like, what is the thing that turns you off? And so would you have any like desires to, I don't even know how to phrase what I'm getting at, but like, if they would just fix this little thing, maybe I would like the Untilted era more, you know what I mean? Since this is a 2005 set coming out like almost the same day as the album itself. You get what I'm asking?
Yeah. I get what you mean. I mean, that period in general, Untilted really is just like one of the albums I never really dug that deep into until we started doing this podcast. But, you know, like Draft and everything, it was always, it just was the one time like Autechre felt like almost clinical or over, like overworking the overproducing, huh, like the record. You know, like we talked about it with like Draft, you know, it does the 7:30 mean it's the seventh, you know, version, you know, whatever.
Right.
You know, it was the first time that they sort of felt like they faltered a little bit. And I think Untilted is an improvement, but until I got, you know, deeper into it, I sort of felt like it was in that same kind of ball. But, you know, they were digging their way out of the hole, but they're still, you know, sort of in it.
Yeah, so is it kind of like that, because the album is so tightly wound, you know, and like chaotic and jittery all the time. You know, I know some people describe it as like kind of annoying, like you're just getting like pummeled in the head constantly.
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe I can imagine somebody describing it as overworked because the beats like rarely stay steady. You know, they're constantly like jittering out and scrambling out and stuttering and everything. So is that kind of what turns you off? And so, you know, you might have wished for a year ago, something, a chilled out Untilted experience.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. Yeah. It's Untilted is one of the like least relaxing albums of theirs to listen to, you know? And so, yeah. I think a live version of it is sort of, you know, tempting or whatever, because yeah, I'd like to see, you know, in the live setting, you can't really overwork things because, you know, it's happening live, you know, you can only do so much and whatnot. So, I think that's perfect.
Yeah. I'm just trying to like pin this down so that we have some direction, like we can circle back around at the end to all of the reputation and hype around this and see if it kind of lived up to it. I mean, for me, I love Untilted. I love Choristis, but what I kind of hope to find here, it was probably something like, because if you go back to Untilted, which I did a couple times because, you know, we're listening to the set, and I should mention up front that I'm like pretty bad at remembering not just song names, but like especially Autechre song names.
Same.
And I hear stuff, I'm like, I know this is one of the Untilted tracks, but it's like, I got to go searching for which one it is, and then I won't remember later anyway. and also, like, we spent so much time listening to this bootleg that some of the tracks have become so familiar to me that when I'm re-listening, I'm like, do I know that from somewhere else or do I just know it from this?
I had the same thing today. I searched on YouTube comments to find if it was, I couldn't remember if it was a song I had heard before or if it was just hearing the bootleg so much. Yeah. Same exact problem.
Yeah. But I mean, anyway, it's just like, so I was kind of revisiting Untilted a little bit, and it is such a dry sounding album. And what I love about Choristis is it sounds like it was recorded in a cavern somewhere or so, like everything is like wet and lush and kind of dreamy, distant a little, whereas Untilted is like right up against your head, you know, which I think gets on some people's nerves. But I mean, I think what I was really looking for was like that kind of Untilted energy that I love so much, like chaotic mess but dreamier and lusher. Like, you know, I guess like any fan, like the things I like most about Untilted plus the things I like most about Choristis is what I wanted to hear. But having said that, let's try, as we sometimes do and always fail to do, to not reference Untilted or Choristus at first here in describing the overall sound palette of this set. Now, because remember, like the first people, the people at this show would not have heard either album. I mean, obviously in the case of Choristus, but Untilted wasn't out yet for a couple days. So how would you describe it if you were one of those viewers?
Yeah, that is pretty nuts. I never thought about that. You know, you're hearing songs from Choristus when the album before that hasn't even come out yet.
I know.
Yeah, it's very difficult to do without bringing up either of those records, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think a little bit to what you were saying, that this definitely has... I think one of the big things I notice about this live set, especially in comparison to like the AE live sets that, you know, are officially released, say I'm allowed to reference those, you didn't say it. it's like this one, it like very much feels like you can tell when there's a track, you know, like track breaks. You know, they don't, it's not like a rock band where they play a song and stop and, you know, then play the next song. But, you know, it's a smooth transitions, but I think it's very clear, like, oh, that's, you know, the first track, that's the second track, you know, so on and so forth. Whereas like AE Live isn't like that very much.
Right.
As for like the actual sounds of it, I think it does definitely... I think we should clarify that this is definitely a soundboard. You know, you're not hearing the room. You're just hearing a direct recording. But it does sort of feel like they are, you know, using a little bit of reverb and space and stuff like that doesn't get used on Untilted. But overall, I think it's definitely got like high energy pretty much the entire time.
Yeah, it starts off like,
yeah, it you know, sounds like it starts in the beginning like, or in the like the middle of a concert, you know, like,
yeah, yeah.
it doesn't,
it kind of fades in with like this, yeah, just like we're going at full clip kind of. And you know, you almost keep that energy. I mean, we'll talk about the structure in a second, but you kind of keep that energy up through almost the entire thing. And you know, that is kind of what I think of when I try to describe the overall sound of this, is like high energy. I mean, it's really, you know, really deep low end, I find, but it's often like quite bouncy, like for long stretches. Lots of sections of this, it's like really bouncing, really grooving. The drums are always hitting so hard, like they just sound slamming all the time. Lots of like, I don't know, like distortion on the snares and stuff that just like keeps, I don't know, just makes it feel like it's like gunfire sounds is how I would describe a lot of the drums here throughout the whole thing. At the same time, you know, there's a lot of, like you said, quite lush, like acid-y type sounds just all over this thing. You know, lots of like squirming, twisted, kind of squelchy acid, but it's like, it's very lush and dreamy. There's even a pretty consistent use of, I don't know, what I would call kind of like accompaniment. Like it almost sounds like a string section, but it's like been shredded or something, like digitized and shredded up, joins a lot of the time to just kind of add to like the lushness of things. So I don't know, I would kind of describe it as like an onslaught of percussion, but with just lots of, I don't know, gritty, lush, dreamy, like sometimes groaning, I don't know, almost like drony sounds, sometimes like arpeggiating sounds, but they're kind of like becoming just this blur of like a wall of sound, almost like lots of depth to kind of dive into.
Yeah.
Which is just a weird contrast with like the most slamming beats, you know?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. This is like, I felt like, you know, I've heard this bootleg tons of times before we were doing the, you know, this episode, but even just continuing to listen to it, I felt like every time, especially if I was like deep in headphones or something, like I'd hear a sound, oh, I didn't think I ever heard that, you know, like I never noticed that before. I think it's such a nice like a dichotomy between those drum sounds, which I think sort of are sort of like those Untilted sounds, the real, you know, kind of high, you know, grating, you know, almost you know, sort of things like those snares, the snares like throughout this whole thing are that, but then it's mixed with such like that whole wall of, you know, it does not sound like just two people, like it's
Yeah.
There's always so much going on, but not in a messy way, just in a in an accompaniment way. I think like what you said, like sort of it being like strings or something, it is almost like you know, a band playing with an orchestra backing them or something, you know, not necessarily in exactly what it sounds, but just like that amount of sound.
Yeah, because you hear like right off, you know, when you start this thing and you hear this kind of heavy thuds and these clicks kind of like, you know, already running at full clip. Mm-hmm. You also hear this kind of like low drone, and it starts kind of like getting scrambled, you know, it's like, you know, and as that piece proceeds, it gets like more and more scrambled, sometimes explodes into these just glorious chord slams. But it's rare that something like that isn't running through this whole set. Like there's often just like a scrambled web mm-hmm. of what I think like in another universe would just sound like a beautiful, beautiful string accompaniment running the whole time, except for it's like a digital, you know, just a mess of like digital code and distortion and glitching and stuff. There are few, like very few points, you know, that really jump out at you when you're listening to this, that things settle down, honestly. And yet, I mean, would you describe, because I feel like the drums are banging, but they're pretty steady, if you know what I mean. Like they're not, you know, I guess we can start bringing Untilted and Choruses into the back into the conversation now, but like they're not as maniacal and chaotic as they are on Untilted. Like they're always pretty rock solid.
Yeah, they're
danceable.
It's reined in. I think it's definitely like built for the audience. You know, it's this definitely sounds like very danceable, especially in comparison with like the later you know, AE Live sets and stuff, like the sit down, you know, kind of concerts,
right.
And all, you know, like this sounds like a ton of fun to be there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think there are sometimes, because you mentioned how it's like pretty clear where the tracks transition, and that's true, but they always seem to do some kind of like, you know, like a weird drifting kind of mess that connects the two tracks.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like it'll start to like fracture and fall apart, and that kind of helps them like shift into new territory. And there are points where it does get like very messy and chaotic, but you don't kind of you don't lose like just that slam and kick or some, or whatever you need to kind of guide you along. But there are points where, like to your point that you were making earlier, like I wrote down, I don't know how this would make any sense in a live setting. Like I think somewhere around like, I don't know, 11 minutes or something like that. It's so chaotic for a couple minutes that in a room, I think it would just sound like an onslaught of noise. Like you would lose it. And there are a couple like transitional moments that it feels like they're flirting with Untilted insanity.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely can hear that. I mean, some of those transitions like definitely get into that, but also I think there's some transitions that are so like long and stretched out that they don't descend into chaos. Like when Io from Choristus plays, you know, on the bootleg, I didn't notice this until a couple times listening through, but really in headphones, it really like starts underneath the section before so far before it's just fully IO, you know?
I know. It does like a little tease. It's like very like Grateful Dead or something can like, you can spot like 3 minutes in advance that like one of the members wanted to move on. And kind of teased it to like signal to everybody else. They actually do that a couple times where you notice, like, and that's weird for two guys sitting behind a keyboard to like be teasing things in that way, like signaling to each other. But you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. I you know, that's a good point. And I wonder how, like, is that planned? You know, is it them signaling? Because, you would think it would just two guys. I mean, they could just speak to each other, or, you know, I think I've made the joke before that they aim each other, you know, while they're playing. But I think that is such a cool thing. And also, like, this may be a little off topic, but it's such a like awesome thing to do for a crowd that's not going to notice that, because, you know, this isn't supposed to be recorded or anything. And so you're going to hear this one time. It took me a couple times to like notice some of these transitions and everything in headphones.
Right.
Like I feel like nobody is really even going to notice how you know, IO comes in. I mean, nobody would know what it is yet. Course is still a year away or whatever. But I just think like things like that, you know, just those little like signals of perfection, you know, like in these things that that nobody's going to hear, but them.
I mean, that's what I wanted to ask you this because, and we've brought this up with like every AE Live thing we've talked about, but like how jammed is this, do you think? And how like kind of pre-planned is it? Because I believe that they talk about Untilted being like sequenced meticulously. Mm-hmm. Like it was literally just a like press record kind of a thing. Whereas Choristus, by all accounts, was quite jammed and improvised mm-hmm. like in the moment. So when you listen to this, do you think of like them kind of flying by the seat of their pants, or is like everything, you know, proceeding exactly as it should? Do you think every night sounded just like this? I mean, we maybe could research that ourselves and didn't bother, but
yeah,
you know, like crowd recordings and stuff. But what do you think?
Yeah, it's hard to say because I mean, even all the records, even Choristus and stuff that is like jammed, it still sometimes feels like, you know, meticulous or whatnot. It's hard to know, you know, what they're doing. We should have listened to another show because I'm curious, but you know, because like those AE Live sets that we have heard, you know, 30 of or whatever, I think it's more than that even,
right.
You know, you could tell the skeleton, you know, of when you listen to the whole tour, basically you could tell it that, you know, there's a set, you know, they're getting from point A to point B to C, D, you know, right. So on, but it's very like jammed in the way that they get there. You know, I mean, some of those shows are even like 30 minutes longer than other shows and stuff, you know, so it's hard to say without hearing other shows, because I would guess that it's that thing, you know, the same as AE Live, but until you're right, Untilted was so like meticulously you know, programmed that maybe this one is a little less that, but also maybe that's why it led to Choristus you know, being a jammed record, you know, besides just Sean's equipment being in a different spot or whatnot.
Right,
but
right.
I don't know, it really is difficult to ascertain, I think.
Yeah, I think I had a hard time deciding. I mean, there are points where it sounds like just a really rock steady beat and foundation, and a lot of those like fluttering, glitchy noises running all over the place mm-hmm. are like sound totally improvised. There are points where there's like a low bass groan and it's doing some like sick acid riff or something, like some real wobbly shit for a while, and then it kind of like falls apart, one of these transitional moments I was describing, and as you mentioned, sometimes go on for quite a while, but it sounds like it almost descends into like a wandering feel that feels very like played in the moment somehow to me. So I just sort of wonder if there's like these sort of set pieces and then they're kind of exploring a little bit in between. Also, you know, we've already started touching on this, but I did want to ask about the structure of the show directly. It does kind of feel like it's just going at like the same, you know, high energy speed the whole time. And then with like kind of some wandering in between, but like never long enough for you to lose, like your heart rate never drops
no.
while listening to this. Like it stays, it's just as high all the time.
No, it definitely feels like, you know, if listening to it feels like you're at the same BPM, pretty much the whole time, you know, minus little, you know, moments here and there. Some of those moments feel like, you know, get a drink of water while you're dancing real quick, but get right back. Cause you know, it's right. coming full steam kind of thing. Yeah.
And I do think like in keeping with Choristus, actually, you know, we talked about how some of those pieces, they sound like you're just hearing a little section of something that was somewhere, is like on its way to a new thing. And then that's where the track ends or something like that. You know, it's never like I don't even know how to phrase this, like a fully developed, you know, like of course not, but verse, chorus, bridge, chorus kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's always like some piece that like shifts into a second piece, and that's the entire track that they release. I do kind of feel that in those transitional moments here. I also feel like it kind of keeps up that kind of high energy, and then toward the end starts to, I don't know, kind of settle in a weird way, but it like stays like your heart rate stays up, but it just sounds like the sounds are getting like a little more chill. And then in a really weird, I think ingenious way, I think the big crescendo of this show at the end is actually like they start turning the tempo up, the BPM up, And I wrote down, like, are they trying to kill the audience? Like, because this is too fast, like, for anybody to dance. They start, like, slowly turning it up, but the sounds get more controlled, more dreamier, you know, like, just there's, like, more droning, and there's more, like, kind of lush ambience running around. Even though the tempo is picking up, it's like a weird ending, but it's almost perfect for a show that already started out too fast, you know. But do you have any other, like, way to describe, you know, the flow? Because we talk so much about the AE live sets, how they're kind of, like, built around a couple crescendos and stuff like that. This is quite different structurally.
Oh yeah, definitely. I don't think this one's not built on, like, you know, working towards that crescendo. In fact, I think, right, like, that there's that huge, like, kind of peak where it's going, like, real crazy. It's all those samples are going. It's around, like, 54 minutes or something. It's like vocal samples, and that really does feel like a sort of jam. It feels like you know, remember, like, when Kanye would play, like, Runaway live, and he would hit the, it's the MPC 1000, same thing. He'd just go nuts hitting the button. It always made me think of that, listening to this, you know, with that, I think it's saying, like, break or something. And then there's, like,
well, yeah, that's the, pro radii. A bunch of listeners wrote into, make fun of us for the way we pronounce this. And I still don't know how to say it right. But from Untilted, you know, that's, like, the crowd noises chopped up with, like, the break, you know, and they do kind of go wild with it. I think, like, it's almost doesn't sound like the original, or I mean the track, the album track. Mm-hmm. It sounds like they're just firing off this sample, like, in the most menacing, insane way possible.
Yeah, but that, like, I feel like that's, like, this huge big thing, and, you know, the first time I listened to it, if you're not looking at the, you know, the track, you know, listing or anything, it feels like, oh, okay, this is the end, but there's, like, 15 more minutes after, you know.
Yeah, and it's an interesting example of what I was just talking about, because actually I think that the album version of Pro Radii, do you know how to say this?
No. I usually always just copy however you say it. You're smart, so I assume you know. But then I get in trouble with you know, Incunabula and stuff.
I got mixed up because I was corrected, like, so severely by some of our listeners, and now I'm, like, scared of, I'm like, is that the right thing that they told me or not? But anyway,
multiple radiuses.
Yeah, right, whatever that is. So it's a good example of what I was talking about, because I think on the album it's a little bit crazier, and here it is wild how they're firing off the samples, but there is this low, like, distorted bass groan running over it, which is, like, very sludgy, like, very metal, and, like, so menacing. And it almost starts to drown out all that chaos. And so it's kind of what I meant by, like, toward the end of the set, things, like, start to settle down, but also get more intense at the same time, if that makes any sense.
I it's a strange thing to say, but I do get what you mean. You know, I think maybe, you know, under the cover of that chaos, like, they are sort of, you know, cranking that tempo or whatnot.
Yeah.
It's a weird but great choice, I think.
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing. I think when you turn this on, if you haven't listened to it before, you'll think, how are they gonna, you know, end this with some big bang, you know? And they, like, somehow pull it off by doing the opposite thing. But let's talk a little bit about the setting, the so-called Glasgow Art School. And I should also apologize on the you know, topic of things we don't know how to pronounce. I do not know how to say Glasgow. Listeners have made fun of us for this as well, so I apologize. We're uncultured Americans. What can I say?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
If it was New York, I'd know it, you know?
Yeah, but anyway, the art school, okay? It's funny because the name might lead you to imagine something like the seated concert halls of the 2016 to 2018 tour, but we both did a little digging. So what is the venue actually like?
Yeah, I sort of always assumed it was, you know, I kind of thought of, like, a theater at, you know, the regular school I went to and whatnot. Right. But yeah, I saw some pictures. It looks just like a normal club. It doesn't look like a school at all. Yeah, it looks like a pretty, you know, standard venue, really.
Yeah, I know. It looks like straight up like a nightclub. I mean, I wanted to bring this up because I don't know if this is like an American versus UK thing or what, but I went to school for a while in the UK. And our student union building had a straight up club in it. Like, it was
weird,
slamming, like, every weekend. I mean, the craziest drink deals It was a mess every single time, but really, really fun. And yeah, it was like, I've never seen anything like that in the States. Maybe there are places in the States that have something like this, but I feel like us stupid Americans are going to see the name of this bootleg, you know, the name of the venue, and imagine something entirely different from what it is, because it is like a sweaty, dank-ass club, basically, and a pretty, you know, small room. Now, I feel like it's important to touch on that. We weren't lucky enough to hear from anybody who actually attended this exact show, but we did hear from listener Jeff, who went to the New Orleans date of the 2005 tour, where he and his NOLA friends had a great time dancing. He says, in contrast, he saw them again in 2015 in Philadelphia, and that time I and everyone else in the room were just standing there. I think it definitely comes down to the 2005 set being a little less experimental, at least relatively speaking. I've heard many others call this set Autechre at their danciest, maybe even their most accessible. But what do you think about that?
I went to a later show, one of the AE Live shows, and it was just people standing around. There was zero dancing happening. But this one, yeah, listening to it, like, this really does sound like a really dancey kind of thing. I wouldn't say that it's like immediately accessible or anything, but I mean, perhaps it is, you know, maybe if you brought a friend with them, I think they'd have fun dancing, at least if they liked electronic music or something. I mean, today, before my wife got home, I was listening to it on the speakers, you know, doing the dishes and stuff, and she even joked that I was at clubbing at the house, you know, before she got home and stuff, you know, so I think it definitely is way dancier than the later show that I attended.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, you're right. I think you could bring somebody to the show that wasn't an Autechre fan, mm-hmm. and they would have a great time. I mean, it's weird in the details, but like we were talking about earlier, it's like that beat is pretty steady, pretty banging, you know, high energy the whole time. I think there would be some points where it gets like a little wild and a little wandering in those transitional parts. But, you know, like you said, you would really need a drink of water at a couple of points. Like, it would work sort of perfectly. I think you would just have like the night of your life when I listened to this. And there are points like that, you know, pro radii part that I think would, I don't know, just blow your mind.
Yeah,
like, it just sounds like the craziest shit is happening.
I think things like that, too, you know, when you're sitting at home listening to headphones, I think those moments seem like maybe more out there. Or wild, then if you're in there, you know, it's just sort of like part of the, you know, the chaos of the concert and stuff. And I don't think it sounds like, oh, they've gone full academic or something. You know what I mean? Like when you're there, it's just part of the feeling and the like. I can't really think of a good word for it, but just the like motion of the room or something.
Yeah. I think that's like, that's steady. That's easily graspable the whole mm-hmm. entire time. So I do think that kind of makes it accessible. You don't usually have something like that to kind of lock right onto. In fact, Autechre likes to do the thing where, like, if you try to focus on the beat, it's a bit of misdirection. Like that's going to boggle your mind a little bit. And there's some other sound in there that you can kind of anchor yourself to. But here it's kind of always the beat. And also, I think, you know, we didn't mention this before, but there's lots of amazing melody on this set, which I think is a little different from Untilted. A lot of those melodies are there, but they are quite buried. Like you really got to search to find them when you're listening to Untilted. Those like slamming drum sounds just completely dominate. But here, they're, you know, like we said, it's quite lush. It's quite quite big and expansive, some of these melodic sounds. And there are cool parts, like I jotted down somewhere around like, 34 minutes, where there is this kind of lovely like cascade of notes that is just so, I don't know, mesmerizing and just like kind of gorgeous. And then it kind of shifts into like this really like super, super deep sub bass line is kind of like bending along with the chords, and the like higher notes and pads start to get a little bit more atonal, and it really goes from like a heavenly dance experience to a hellish dance experience. But I feel like that would kind of affect anybody. Like it would, you know, I don't even know how to articulate it, but it's just like, you would kind of feel that in your bones, even if you weren't listening too closely, if you were just dancing your ass off.
Yeah. Cause also I think you gotta remember too, like you would be hearing it on a, you know, huge venue sound system that's right. that's gonna be bass heavy and you know shake your bones even you know a normal group playing. And then you know I think when you make it Autechre and they're really gonna shake your bones kind of thing, that is one I would like to hear an audience recording of this if it exists, because yeah, you know I would like yeah. to hear the room a bit. You know, I wish you know, soundboards are always the best for, you know, hearing all the details, but it's, you know, often things are sort of lost in that.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just worth emphasizing, you know, if you can kind of picture what this venue looks like, you know, I think you can, it's easier to imagine mm-hmm. like what a joyous time this must have been. Like, you know, you hear these live shows and you just, you can hear the audience usually, but you think like, I mean, when I with other bands and stuff like that, but you just sort of think like, God, can you imagine being there? Like, it's the same feeling I get, even though this is just a soundboard somehow. On that note, we also heard from listener Darren, who writes, I saw them play this set in Osaka in a huge venue that was completely packed and the crowd went wild for it. It was without a doubt the biggest venue and audience I've seen for an Autechre show. The Art School sounds a little different, right? Kind of a lot smaller. But do you get the feeling that the guys were trying to be more quote unquote crowd pleasing on this tour? Maybe after the very experimental, like Confield to Draft era, they were like, you know, let's go get asses dancing.
I don't know that they were trying to be more crowd pleasing. I think maybe they wanted to do that. You know, maybe they themselves were, you know, kind of tired of yeah. the more experimental, but they don't seem like a band that's like, we got to get asses dancing, you know, like
yeah,
especially, you know, that second, you know, AE Live, you know, tour where it's asses and seats, you know, very academic kind of thing. I don't think they put much thought into that. I don't think a lot of, you know, artists do. I think it's sort of what you want. I mean, maybe I'm putting words in their mouth, but still.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I was just thinking about it because how I understand Untilted is like, it's objectively weird as hell. I mean, to sort of an outsider, I think they would find it like absolutely yeah. bizarre. But if you're kind of following Autechre along chronologically, it sounds like some kind of return to the roots of dance music or something like that. It's got like very, you know, the sound design is not as much of an emphasis, and a lot of the sounds kind of evoke, like, without directly using, but kind of evoke like standard kind of 808s and 909s, like mm-hmm. nothing too flashy or fancy, and a lot of like really these kind of slamming sounds of early hip hop, early dance music. And, you know, they talked a little bit in interviews about, you know, we are DJs after all, like we can't get away with that. And I've just always had the sense that they maybe got a little burnt out after doing Confield and Draft and felt like could maybe we should be fun again. Like it's becoming a bit of a drag, you know? And, so I bring that up because I wanted to ask you, like, if that's the point, maybe you don't agree, but if you do, if that's the point of Untilted, to like get back to basics, you know, bands always do this. Do you think that, like, do you have any temptation to say that this live recording is actually the better execution of what they were after on Untilted? And it's worth also remembering Choristus, which seems similar in that it's like, let's actually play again. You know, like we haven't actually been jamming for a while. We've been like doing these, you know, meticulous tinkering type of albums for a while. Let's actually jam. So if you're not as hot on Untilted, I know you do like Choristus a lot, but like when you listen to this, do you feel like this is kind of a better execution of what they tried to do on Untilted?
I kind of do. I sort of hate to say it, but I sort of do feel like that. You know, it's the mixing on Untilted is not my favorite. You know, I like we've talked about those.
Yeah.
It's just so high. It's so high heavy.
Right.
And so dry. This, you know, is like, we've got the same drum sounds and, you know, sort of the same energy, the same kind of beats and stuff. But we've also got like, it's not so dry. There's all these like multi-layered sound. It's like we're doing that, like, let's have fun, but also let's do, you know, sort of sound design stuff. I mean, I know that this is the, you know, the lost album between those two, but it like really does sort of feel like that because I feel like they maybe overcorrected with Untilted, you know, like I think you're right. Then maybe they decided like, oh, let's be fun again. But then I don't know I don't know why that record's so dry. Like, I don't know what the choice was there. But, you know, this is clearly mixed for, you know, the live setting. And I think it just sounds better. Like, it's just like a nicer thing to listen to.
Yeah, it's weird because, like I said, I was listening to this and then I would jump back to Untilted just to check if this was, like, the thing I was recognizing. And it's shocking because when I'm listening to this, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is, like, the the LCC, like, a track, the opening track of Untilted that I love. Love it here. Loved it there. And then I jump back to the Untilted version. I'm like, damn, this is way drier than the thing I was just hearing. I didn't even realize. And it's almost like they took, I don't know what they were trying to do with the dryness, but I mean, I mentioned this all through that episode. I mentioned it earlier here as well, but like what I kind of like about Untilted is it sounds like just, you know, firing line in your ears. And then if you really dig deep into it and listen closely, you'll hear a lot of like gorgeous tones and melodies and even some lush moments. But they're hard to find, and here they're just up front and center. Yeah. And it makes it like a less intellectual experience and much more of like a bodily kind of dance experience, which, you know, yeah. So I hesitate to say, because I love Untilted so much, but I hesitate to say it's like a better execution of that, but it's certainly more fun execution.
I think that I maybe agree. It's certainly a more fun execution. I think it's really shows how, you know, good they are at knowing, you know, their aim for it. Because, you know, if they played stuff live that was as dry and stuff as Untilted is, that would not sound good. Like not the music, but just like the actual sound would be bad. And yeah, you know, they're so like good at just changing it up, you know, even though they're playing some songs, you know, from Untilted, they change them enough for the setting, you know. And I think that's such like mastery of especially like electronic music to be able to you know, just kind of change it almost on a whim to fit your you know, location or setting and everything is very impressive.
Yeah, well, also, you know, on the topic of the sound, I noticed this interesting YouTube comment from listener Marius, who complains that, quote, the Glasgow soundboard, it sounds kind of thin, presumably to adapt to the venue in which it was played. We talked about the almost too dry sound of the AE Live recordings, which in person, you know, would probably be like pinging and bouncing all around the room. You know, it's almost like they've removed a little bit of reverb that should be there because the reverb would be added by the setting, as well as the kind of low end, which we talked at length about how it's really kind of bodily and like shaking you in the gut. Whereas when you're listening on headphones, it just doesn't have that same experience. So that all gets kind of lost, that kind of stuff in a soundboard. So what do you think we're missing here by not actually being at the art school?
Yeah, I think you're definitely missing some of that like body shaking. You know, I can tell it's there from headphone listening. I mean, that kick drum that starts off the set and that first little section is like, yeah, it's the best sounding kick drum I think I've ever heard in my life. It's just like, I kept last night I kept just listening to that section over and over, just being like, I just want that kick drum sound, you know, in my sampler, you know, kind of thing. But I think, you know, in your headphones, you could tell. I was listening on some speakers. You could tell. But, you know, we've talked about this before, but we got to set the PA up and have our own art school, you know. It's you're definitely no home equipment is going to, like, really shake your bones the way a giant, you know, venue sound system is going to.
Yeah. I mean, weirdly, though, I guess, you know, I feel like this is a lot closer to the experience than AE Live is, than those sets are. Like, I feel like when you listen to those sets, you are really not getting what people in the room got. And I feel like when you listen to this, of course, you're missing something, but you do, I think you get the idea. Like, it sounds like a giant ball of energy that is just, it starts off at a high clip and just keeps it going the whole time. I mean, I find my foot just like tapping, you know, like I can't stop it the whole time. So it feels like a much closer experience to the real deal somehow.
Which that's strange that they would release, you know, 30 odd recordings of the one that you're losing a lot of stuff from, and then not release something like this, you know.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you what your favorite parts of this set are. And of course, we've sort of alluded to a bunch of them already. But first, let me note that listener Darren shared his favorite segment, which is, you know, kind of hard to describe, but it's basically the extra shimmery part almost exactly halfway through. In fact, I think it's those kind of cascading notes I was alluding to earlier, like really, really pretty part. But what do you love most here?
Yeah, I mean, these sections are so great. I mean, I love the way it begins. I love that just mm-hmm. like steam train already, you know, rolling down the track, you know, kind of just a fade in, like they've been playing yeah. for hours and you know, yeah. we've just now turned on the sound system. That's such a cool, you know, intro. And then that first little section too, how it's, you know, it's pretty straightforward beat, and you're like, okay, all right. I could see if you didn't know who Ottecker was. You know, if you were that friend, you're dancing, and then those like little syncopations come in, and it's like, you know, it's like that little stuttering, yeah. like, oh man, that would just like blow your mind, I think, you know. So I really love that section. I also I really love in about. I think it's the next section after that, actually. It's about like 7 minutes in or something. It's the voice from Io, but not played over Io.
Yeah.
Listeners of the podcast will know, I usually, you know, I'm down on the vocal samples a lot, you know, not my favorite thing. But I think it works so cool here. It sounds like, it reminds me of like Numbers from Kraftwerk, you know, where it's like just saying numbers in another. But it's like that, but it's like so not even distorted, just like changed in a way.
Yeah,
like I can't even tell if it's saying a word or if it's just like mm-hmm. phonetic sounds or anything. It even like sometimes it sounds so straight. It sounds like when like Hal is dying in 2001, you know, singing Daisy, and it's getting slower and slower. So it like reminds me of that and stuff. Like that's like so cool, and it sounds so rad. I just really like the idea that I assume that they came up with those two sections like completely separately, and then they were like, oh, I bet that would be cool on top of IO. Yeah, I think that's like a real glimpse into the creative process, I think, and so I really enjoy that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I love like the whole beginning of this, you know, like you said, is a rush, and I mentioned it earlier, but like the way that that drone that starts off the set gets kind of scrambled kind of along with that, those, you know, momentary stutters in the beat, and then it'll kind of explode or just like erupt into this like big chord slam that is like very epic, actually. Like, it reminds me of, I don't know if everybody likes these guys, but you remember that group Justice? It's kind of like a Daft Punk ripoff.
They suck.
Well, whatever you think, they can make some like pretty epic bangers, and it just has like that big slamming kind of quality, the way like the chords rush in, and it's just, it's such a rush, like you said, like really starts off with a rush. I think like, and it's kind of cheating, but it's like the reason I picked it, but the music we use for our intro to this podcast is probably my favorite part of this whole thing.
That is from this.
Yeah, it's you know, it's somewhere around, I don't know, 16 minutes or so. It gets like this very deep, like kind of trap baseline thing, like really bouncy. Actually, it's like the first time that things have kind of chilled out a little bit. It almost starts to verge on like Lowride territory, you know, the song from Incunabula, like, and so like very, I don't know, just rolling like trap low end, this kind of like steady shaker going along, and then like these really like light tones, like these high tones kind of dancing around, forming like this really, I don't know, almost cute melody, and just everything is just bouncing. It is, I don't know, such a treat, that part.
Yeah, I like in that part, maybe a little bit past that, it like really like a ton of like cymbal noises happen, but they sound like mm-hmm. they sound like laser, like cymbals made of lasers or something. That's like such a cool moment too.
Yeah, it weirdly like it like kind of gets pretty chill at that point, and then I sort of jotted down like around 20 minutes it shifts into like something that I can only describe as drunk, like drunk off its ass, because like the snare gets like real sloppy and is like stumbling around on top of what was like a pretty chill like kind of West Coast vibe, and the whole thing, I don't know, just starts to get like all wobbly. There's a lot of like wobbly wonky moments on this thing that are really lovely, and then actually that that section sort of smoothly transitions into, I think we get the LCC part, but then it shifts into the spot that Darren highlighted, which I mentioned before, just loving like how gorgeous these cascading notes get, and then how they subtly shift into something kind of demonic. I just glancing through my notes, there's another part around 48 minutes that's like one of my favorites. You actually get what sounds like a pretty like just normal piano clinking, you know, like in kind of an arpeggiating pattern, which is like quite surprising. But you start to get this quite ominous drone that really sounds like low droning feedback. Like it gets quite, you know, quite non-musical in that moment. And all of a sudden you start to get like these really wet dripping sounds. There's even a part around here that like almost sounds like a sample, like a low bit rate sample of something like splashing in water. And I start to think of like the dank caves that I imagine Choristus recorded in, but it gets like really particularly dreamy at that moment. I think those would be my tops. Anything else you want to highlight?
No, I pretty much agree with you. You know, I could essentially list every section. I really don't think there's any like part that should be cut out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, let me ask you actually, how do you feel about these incarnations? I guess we touched on this before, but of various Untilted and Choristus tracks, you know, obviously nobody at the show would have recognized them, but you know, I wonder if you get the same rush I do, like when they get to the quote unquote hits, you know, so to speak. It's like when I recognize IO or LCC, I'm like, hell yeah, you know, like do you get that same kind of feeling listening to this set?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I said it at the beginning of the show, but sometimes I just couldn't remember if I just was getting excited about a part I remember of the show or whatnot, but yeah, I mean, like IO is one I that's one of the songs I like a lot on Choristus and stuff, so I, you know, recognized it and all. And like I said, I mean, it's so neat to, you know, hear those songs not fully formed and stuff. Yeah, you know, in the Choristus part of it. It's just a cool look at the creative process, and then even the Untilted stuff, that which, you know, the record's coming out the next day or whatever, but to hear it, you know, it's still, it's never like they just play it straight, you know, it's always like there's something changed about it, you know, even just in the mixing or whatnot. Yeah, and that's such like an interesting thing to hear. I wish I was better at you know, remembering track titles and
right yeah.
So I could be a little more excited.
Yeah, and I mentioned it before, but like that Pro Radii part is just so transformed from the Untilted version in like a way that turns it into a, you know, like a metal track.
Yeah.
Like it's like that menacing, and it's just such a cool, I mean, such a cool accomplishment, like the way they transform a track I already loved and like make me love a very different version of it. You know, you mentioned this, I was going to ask you if there's anything you don't love here. You know, you said you wouldn't change a thing. I honestly, there's not a single second of this that I'm not like thrilled.
No, exactly. It's, you know, it's so high energy and like fun that it's an hour and like 8 minutes, I think. And it does not even feel like it. You know, I think like when I listen to it, I'm like, that's pretty short show they've done. But really it's like, you know, fairly long and stuff. There's nothing I would cut, you know, I'm never, even those transitions and stuff, I think they're all like frankly perfect. I gave it a perfect 5 stars on my Rate Your Music. You know, I think that this is, if this was released as a, you know, an official live record or something, I think it would be you know, an essential, I think it still is an essential listen, but I wish it was more accessible for people.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there, you know, there's just nothing that I can even think to complain about it. It is like a wild trip the whole time. Never lets up. You never, you know, like we did the AE Live stuff, and of course we were listening to like a bunch of sets all in the same like week, which was tough to begin with, but still, there are like so many moments where I would kind of drift off, like it gets a little lost, like just in the drift and stuff, or, you know, on the 2015 sets, like just kind of endless barrages of noise. And they're just like, this is just easy as hell to listen to. I guess you could call that accessible to our earlier conversation, but it's like, it keeps your attention the whole time. So
it definitely keeps your attention. In fact, like I was trying to, I like frequently read while listening to Ottekker and just music that doesn't have words in it in general. And like, I was trying to read last night listening to this, and like I just kept losing focus in the book because like the set would take me away from it, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, that's something you know, really cool. I feel like things like you know, jazz records and electronic things that like really can take my attention away from like you know, they go from being a background to being, you know, foreground in your attention is a difficult thing to do for I think instrumental music, and you know, impressive and you know, cool.
Yeah. Well, starting to wrap up here, because I had the ambition to not make this as long as the,
as the
set itself, although we always fail when we try to keep it short. But, you know, weird question. Does listening to the set change your mixed feelings about Untilted at all? Like, did it give you any kind of new appreciation for Untilted or anything like that?
I honestly don't think so. You know, it's kind of like Untilted is the Untilted and Draft are the two like Ateca records that I don't really go back to unless I'm running through the whole discography, or, you know, I need to listen to it for the show or something. You know, they're not the ones that I super enjoy. And in fact, listening to the set, like if I listen to Untilted, it just sort of makes me rather listen to this set, you know, like I'm always just sort of like wanting to, okay, that's good. You know, if I'm going through the discography or whatnot, you know, Untilted, it's fine. I don't hate it or anything. But I just think like this set is such a step forward and better that I always just kind of rather get to it.
That's interesting. Yeah. I wonder if others feel the same. You know, I still love Untilted. I love this. I think of them as sounding like actually quite differently. And in a weird way, listening to this set like makes me appreciate how like it makes Untilted sound even weirder, you know, like sort of brings out how weird Untilted really is. Because if you're going through the discography chronologically, you're coming off Confield and Draft. Mm-hmm. Untilted to me sounds like a rush of fun and energy. It's like weirdly the, we may have talked about this, but kind of like the funniest Autechre record. Like it's like the most playful Autechre record. But then you listen to this, which is like truly fun and truly playful, and you go back to Untilted, you're like, actually, maybe Untilted is a lot weirder than I gave it credit for. So in a way, I would say it maybe does make me like Untilted more. Do you think it's fair to describe this as the missing link between Untilted and Choristus as advertised? Or is it like, you know, more one than the other or what?
I think it's maybe a little more Choristus than Untilted, but it definitely, yeah. I think it really is sort of that missing link. There's definitely, you're hearing the transformation of like what will come, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, yeah, I think like sound palette wise, it's a lot closer to Choristus, and that kind of really dry, like gunfire sound palette of Untilted is kind of what makes Untilted Untilted. So it feels very much, very, very, a lot closer to Choristus. You know, in a weird way, it feels like when you listen to this, because I wanted to ask, a lot of people say this, like, do you wish that we actually got an album of this material, or is it not like different enough from either? Like it's too caught in the middle, because I see people say things like, I wish they had released, you know, basically this set or the stuff they were working on at this moment as its own album. But I think when you listen to this, like there are actually quite a lot of ideas that are either on Untilted or Choristus, you know, so it's just not separated enough from either of them, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with you. I don't wish that this was an album. You know, I think we did get that album and it's Choristus. You know, all their live sets, you know, at least that I've heard, like are always sort of working towards the next thing. And they are sort of transitory in that sense. You know, they're always kind of between two worlds or, you know, into the next one. I think I wish they had released this like as a live album, you know, maybe not in 2015, but like, you know, now or you know, when they did the AE live, you know, dumps. I think it would make a great live album, but I don't wish that this, you know, just was split up into however many tracks and thrown on a record at all. No.
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of perfect as it is. And actually the propulsive, like, never stopping nature of it is kind of a major part of it, you know,
and I think that's tracks. And that's hard to do on a record, you know, like to keep that propulsion because yeah, you're going to split it up and then naturally you're going to have people who just listen to some tracks or something. And really, I think this is this. While it has definite sections, it's really, you know, an hour and 8 minute, you know, kind of composition.
Yeah. So as we kind of mentioned, you know, this is the most popular AE bootleg probably by far. It's kind of the one, like, if you ask around, you know, how do I get into AE bootlegs? Like, they'll recommend this one. You know, do you think that's justified having spent all this time with it now? Do you think, like what explains kind of that popularity and is it deserved?
Yeah, I think it's definitely justified. You know, I'm pretty sure this is the first, you know, Autechre bootleg I ever heard. And I think because it's that, you know, sort of missing link between two albums, it has enough of like Choristus and stuff to ground you if you know that. And I feel like if you're listening to live bootlegs, you probably know the artist's, you know, discography fairly well already. And, you know, Untilted is one of their lower rated records on like Rate Your Music and stuff. Of course, this is lower though. Yeah. And you know, so it's sort of a maligned period and everything. And then so to hear it like in a different light, in a different way, really, I think makes it worthwhile, you know?
Yeah, I agree. It does kind of, it's kind of interesting because if you think of like the most famous live albums of all time, they usually come from those kind of golden eras of bands, you know, that everybody loves already. And this is kind of an interesting one because it comes from an era that I think is kind of overlooked even by Autechre fans, but especially by non Autechre obsessives.
Yeah.
I think it will weirdly bring that era to life for a lot of those people. So I do think it's like a great, And maybe because you won't be as familiar with it if you're kind of a newcomer with the actual pieces that are here, it may actually even be even more fun, you know, for that reason, because it'll sound like totally new stuff. Now, we didn't actually get many emails on this bootleg. A few people like weirdly wrote in things like, I know you're going to get a ton of emails about this, so I won't bother. But I did want to read this from listener Tyler, who writes, just wondering if you've considered covering any of the more well-known live bootlegs that are floating around out there, particularly the 2005 Glasgow show. Discord turned me on to this earlier this week, and I hadn't ever heard it before, but it's absolutely incredible. I was also pointed to a 2001 Toronto show that was fairly interesting, too. I'm not sure what else is out there, which is part of the reason it would be great to hear what you're aware of and or can find and recommend. I think something like this should be our goal on the next episode, just surveying a few particularly cool bootlegs that listeners should check out after Glasgow. What do you think?
Yeah, that sounds fun to me. I'd love to get into some of the bootlegs that I don't know and everything. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I have a couple go-tos, but I'll try branching out a little bit more. But I think that'll be our goal for next time, so we can talk a little bit more, not this in depth, but kind of survey a couple cool things that maybe you'll want to check out. But that kind of wraps it up. Any other closing thoughts on the Glasgow Art School set?
No, really, just you know, if you've not heard it before, it's easily found on YouTube. But don't listen to music on YouTube because it's it's in 192. But you know, download the MP3. I think it's a 256 is the best quality. Download that. You know, put on some nice headphones, or you know, hook up an entire PA in your house, and definitely listen to this.
Yeah, must hear. I mean, it's like it's such a good time, honestly.
All right, well, what do you think about this set? And more importantly, what are your favorite AE bootlegs? We'll survey a few more on our next episode, so be sure to let us know. GonkCastPod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out, subscribe, leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast, look us up, YouTube, stay connected on Twitter and Instagram. Both of those are @GonkCastPod, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.